Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week was born in Cuba and emigrated to the United States when she was 5. She earned a bachelor's degree in industrial engineering from the University of Miami and an MBA from Nova Southeastern University. In 2007, she joined Pacific Gas and Electric, and in early 2017, she was named the CEO and president of PG&E, thereby making her the first Latino CEO of a Fortune 500 company in our history. Her name, Geisha Williams. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to a most unbelievable young woman, Geisha Williams. Since March 1st, she's been the CEO and president of Pacific Gas and Electric. Geisha, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's my pleasure.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Oh, sure. So I was born in Cuba. To working class people, my mom and dad were really just wonderful people. They're still living. And we were in Cuba, and they got married right after the Cuban Revolution. And it wasn't long until they really came to the conclusion that this just wasn't a great place to live. They saw that Castro was really turning Cuba into a political state. Freedoms were really limited. And so my parents became political dissidents. And because they were against the sort of totalitarian form of government that Castro put in place, my father was imprisoned for 3 years as a political prisoner for his ideology and his belief that, you know, that this wasn't the right path for Cuba to be on. When I was four, he was released from prison, and he was incarcerated, and this is incredible, he was incarcerated and sentenced. And I think the charge was suspicion of being against the revolution. That's all that was necessary. To be suspected to be against the government, that was enough reason to throw you in jail. He came out when I was 4 years old, and shortly thereafter, right when I was 5, we left the country. We came to the United States and actually settled briefly in Minnesota, where my father had an aunt that really was our sponsor. So that was quite the change for both my parents and myself. We were lucky enough, though, to come to this great country and have made a great life ever since.
What's the biggest thing, Geisha, you learned from Dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
You know, I have a great relationship with my parents, and both of them will tell you that nothing is more important than freedom, and that was sort of drummed into me day in and day out. But beyond that, they taught me, you know, the importance of hard work, of being educated, of being prepared, of perseverance, of being part of a community that you serve. My parents would always say, you know, hard work will never kill you, and no one can ever take your education away from you. I remember those things very, very clearly, and they have been very much a part of me ever since. I have worked hard to get an education, and I've always been a hard worker, and I've always been a believer that, you know, your hard work ultimately pays off, and I attribute those beliefs very much to my mom and dad.
You mentioned that when you were 5 years old, Mom and Dad got out of Cuba, and you went to Minnesota for a year. What do you remember about that trip, and what do you remember about Minnesota?
Oh, my gosh. So Minnesota was the warmest people, but the coldest place. That's what my parents would tell you, and that's what I saw as well. I remember the night that we arrived in Minnesota, it was really, really late and dark, and, of course, cold, very, very cold. And we weren't equipped. We didn't have coats. We didn't have gloves. We didn't have scarves. We were just coming from the subtropics in the heart, you know, in the dead of winter. and my parents just being shocked and couldn't believe at the amount of construction that appeared to be happening all over the city, all over the state. They believed that they were seeing gigantic sand hills and construction material. And the driver told my mom, "That's not sand, Mrs. Jimenez. That's snow." And I remember that really, I don't know, for some reason I've never forgotten that. And my mom saying, "No, I don't believe it." And the car driver stopping the car and allowing my mom and I to go outside, and I put my hands on the snow. And I was just like, what is this magical thing? I mean, I thought it was marvelous. My parents were a little frightened of it, but I remember that so very clearly about our very first night in Minnesota.
What were your dreams as a young Cuban girl growing up in Minnesota and then New Jersey?
Well, you know, my dreams were not particularly lofty. I wanted to be a good citizen. I wanted to be productive. I wanted to help my community just as my parents were vibrant parts of their community. I it was drummed into me. So, of course, I had a strong belief in long-term getting an education, becoming a professional. And, you know, again, my dreams weren't particularly lofty. Maybe someday having a good job with a good company and making a positive contribution to this great country that had taken us in. So I wish I could tell you that as a child I was thinking about becoming a CEO, but that wasn't the case at all. I just was very focused on an education, doing well, giving back, and having the American dream, having an opportunity for success and having an opportunity for, again, through my hard work, that good things would come.
Geisha, how did you ever get the name Geisha?
I get that question a lot. It is an unusual name, of course. Well, I come from a very traditional Spanish family. My mom's whole line of the side of the house is from Spain. And they had a tradition where the first daughter of every line would be named Ana Maria. My mom's name is Ana Maria. And she was just like so sick and tired of that, you know, that tradition. She wanted to break with it. She wanted to have something completely different. And so she and my dad went on the hunt for an unusual name. And when she was pregnant with me, they literally went out to dinner and a movie with, at the time, my godparents-to-be. And the movie that they saw this one particular night, oh, my gosh, it's so cheesy, was called The Barbarian and the Geisha. Or maybe it was The Geisha and the Barbarian. I never know which is the right order. And they loved it. It was a John Wayne movie from the 1950s and set in Japan. And they just thought the name Geisha was so cool, so different. And they just fell in love with it. And from that moment on, if they didn't know that I was going to be a girl, but if they were having a girl, she was going to be called Geisha. And that's how I got my name.
How was it you ever chose industrial engineering as your major?
Well, you know, I was really good in math and science when I was in high school. And I had this wonderful teacher when I was in high school named Barbara Strobert, who came to me one day and said, "Geisha, you know, you're so terrific in math. Have you ever considered engineering?" And of course I hadn't. I didn't even know what engineers did. But she said something to me that really struck a chord. She said, "You know, there aren't that many women that go into the engineering ranks. You could be terrific, and you could show other girls, other women, that they could be every bit as good as engineers as men can be." And I think she struck a chord with me. And I did love math and science. And so when I graduated from high school, I decided on engineering. And then industrial engineering specifically, because it's really all about how to work with people and processes and how to really make everything that we do more efficient. And it's really about working with the teams of people that get the work done every single day to make processes more efficient. And I love that. I thought that would be a really great use for my skills.
We're talking to Geisha Williams. And in 1983, she went to work for Florida Power and Light. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Geisha Williams, who was the first Latino CEO of a Fortune 500 company in our history. That is tall cotton, Geisha. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You went to work for Florida Power and Light, 1983. You were there for 24 years. How did you get there? And most importantly, tell us about that 24-year chapter of your life.
Well, Jack, you know, it's serendipity. I don't know how else to put it. I remember being at in college. It was my junior year of college, and I was looking for a summer job. And I was trying to figure out, you know, how to best improve my chances of getting great employment after I graduated from college. So I was looking to work with a reputable type of company. I mean, if I needed to be a waitress or a hostess, or if I needed to flip burgers, I certainly would do that. But I was trying to find work in the summer that was related to my field of study. And I was walking down the hallway of my engineering building one day, and on the bulletin board, there was this little sticky, this little, like, yellow piece of paper, and it said, "Wanted, industrial engineer summer student, Florida Power and Light, call Rick," and it had the number. And I thought, well, why not? You know, I don't know exactly what Florida Power and Light needs engineers for, but I'll call Rick. What the heck? It sounds like it might be interesting. And I had one of those amazing interviews on the phone where it just clicked, and he hired me on the spot. And 2 weeks later, I was working at Florida Power and Light as a summer student, not a summer student, a summer intern, doing whatever Rick wanted me to do. But a lot of it was simulation analysis, time and motion, some statistical sampling. It was great work, and I fell in love with the industry, with the company, with the service orientation that the employees had, with the focus on community, and I just fell in love with electricity, too. I mean, without electricity, our commerce, our way of life just kind of grinds to a halt. And I thought, wow, I want to be part of that industry. So when I graduated from college a year later, I only applied to one company, and I had the good fortune of being hired by Florida Power and Light.
You had another great fortune in that God sends us angels in our lives, and one of your angels, Geisha, was a man named Clark Cook. Tell us about Mr. Cook, and what's the biggest thing he taught you?
So Clark Cook is just the best mentor I've ever had in my entire career. And he continues to be my mentor today. We're still very close. I had the good fortune of working for him early in my career. I think I was like 24 or so. And he was providing me guidance and mentorship. And he asked me one day, you know, what I wanted to do long term, what my career aspirations were. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, I didn't have particularly lofty career aspirations. So I think I said I wanted to be a manager or maybe a director someday. And he said, no, Geisha, long term. What do you want to do long term? And I was thinking long term, but I must have had a quiz, you know, sort of a puzzled look on my face. And he said, Geisha, somebody has to run this company someday. Why not you? Why not me? I mean, it blew me away, Jack. You know, people like me weren't CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. You know, I was Latina. I was an immigrant. You know, I'm a woman. I was young. You know, I just didn't even think that it was possible. But he said to me, look at the men, it was all men, look at the men that are running this company. They're engineers. They have strong backgrounds in operations. You're an engineer. If you get that experience, there's no reason why you can't run this company someday. And he just lit a fire. He gave me this permission to go for it. He was such an inspiration to me. And I started thinking, you know, why not? Why can't I aspire for something bigger than just maybe manager or director? I still wasn't thinking CEO, but I started to think bigger. I started to dream bigger. I started really, as your show says, telling myself anything is possible. If I work hard, anything is possible. And I went for it. And so this man has really meant a great deal to me in my life.
All right. So you were on track to ultimately run Florida Power and Light. But then in 2007... you decide to leave and join Pacific Gas and Electric. Why?
You know, it was probably the toughest, most difficult decision I have ever made to leave FPL. I love that company. I love the people that I worked with. But at the end of the day, there was something about PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, that really drew me. It's about the sustainable energy future we were trying to create here. I mean, California is very much at the vanguard of this transformation in the energy landscape. I was really drawn to PG&E's focus on renewables and clean energy. I just thought that was terrific. I also looked at its history. It's such a really proud history here in terms of, and they're very much woven into the California fiber, you know, the fabric. And I don't know. There was just something. It was a promotion. It was a bigger job. It was a dual commodity, so I'd have gas and electric experience. It was much larger responsibilities. And I thought it was just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to grow as a leader, to grow as an individual. And my husband and I loved California. We often vacationed here. We have two young girls at the time. And we thought it'd be a wonderful opportunity for them to see a different part of the country. At the end of the day, it was a family decision. It wasn't just a career decision. And we thought, as a family, we were going to be very happy here in California. And that actually has happened.
Tell us about Pacific Gas and Electric, please.
It's a great company. It's, you know, again, as I mentioned, it's part of the very fabric of California's history. It's been around for over 100 years. It has built the state's energy infrastructure, which is so important to our commerce and to our way of life. PG&E serves 16 million people across 70,000 square miles in northern and central California. So it's a big, big company serving a lot of people. We have one of the largest combined gas and electric energy companies in the country. We have more than 20,000 dedicated and talented employees that are available night and day, it seems, to our communities. And every single day, we're focused on providing safe, reliable, affordable, and clean energy to our communities. We're one of the largest and cleanest energy companies in the whole country. You'll be, just amazed by this, but 70% of our customers' electricity is produced with zero greenhouse gas emissions. That's something I'm very proud of. And over the long term, we're really focused on helping California meet its very bold climate and clean energy goals. And we're really focused on providing the energy network of tomorrow, the one that's going to meet the needs of our customers well into the future.
Tell us about the 20,000-plus team members you've got, and especially the linemen and the crews when a storm hits and there's a major power outage.
Jack, I am so inspired by our employees. They are amazing. They're ready to respond to our customers' needs every hour of every day. They have such a service mindset. It just gives me incredible, incredible pride. Our employees take a lot of pride in their work and their focus on safety, in their connections to the communities where they live and work, in their ability to kind of work together and tackle issues for our customers. They are amazing, smart, dedicated, focused, and the greatest asset that our company has.
If you want to learn more, www.pge.com. Geisha, let's go back to Thursday, September 9th, 2010. It's 6:11 p.m. What happened?
Oh, it's just tragic. We had a gas pipeline that served the city of San Bruno, which is just south of San Francisco. It ruptured and exploded and caught into flames and just devastated this community. At the end, 8 lives were lost. So many people were injured. We had a whole community just devastated. It was the defining moment of my career, without a doubt. I think back on that day, and it still gets to me, Jack. I mean, it was just such a horrible, horrible tragedy. You know, we've worked hard to become a stronger and better company. Since San Bruno, we've taken significant actions to improve our safety culture and performance. We're committed to maintaining our focus on safety. We've really been focused on improving our gas safety in particular. You know, a number of factors played a role in what led up to the failure of the pipeline that day. But part of it was record-keeping practices, also our integrity management practices. And we've worked really hard every single day to be the safest gas company in the country since then. And we've made enormous, enormous progress since then. Very proud of the work we've done. But I'll tell you, we'll never forget the lessons of San Bruno. I will never forget the lessons of San Bruno. It drives who I am as a leader today, and it's really about leading with safety. Nothing matters if you don't have a safe operation, and why we're a bit obsessed with safety processes and safety practices.
We're talking to Geisha Williams. When we come back, we'll ask her about the belief that the energy industry is the lifeblood of our economy. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Geisha Williams, who since March of 2017 has been the CEO and president of Pacific Gas and Electric. It's been said that the energy industry, your industry, is the lifeblood of our economy. How have you seen this in your career, Geisha?
You know, I've seen it firsthand. I remember as a child working with my parents in their grocery store and understanding the vital importance that their energy bill played in either having a good month or a bad month. I mean, having a high energy bill might mean that we might be in the red that particular month. So having safe, reliable, and affordable energy that's clean is vitally important to our individual customers. And I've seen that not just in my own personal life, but in my career. I've worked with small businesses who depend on energy to run their corporations and their operations, and today I see it across all sectors of the economy. We provide energy in the San Francisco Bay Area, which, of course, is home to some of the most innovative companies in the world, and they depend on clean, reliable, safe power. We serve the Central Valley, which is one of the world's most productive agricultural regions. And again, they depend on clean, safe, reliable, affordable energy. Very often, we're working directly with customers to meet their very specific energy needs at a price that they can afford. And that's something that we're very proud of, the way that we're able to customize some of our offerings. On a going forward basis, we want to be the energy company that makes it possible for our customers and communities to continue to grow, prosper, and succeed. And that's the role that we can play in helping our communities.
Geisha, our mutual friend Tony Early was your predecessor at Pacific Gas and Electric. What's the biggest thing you learned from Tony?
I learned so much from Tony. What a wonderful man. I just absolutely adore him. I think, though, if I had to pick just one thing, I would say his focus on servant leadership. Servant leadership is all about listening to your teams, learning from their expertise, and really removing obstacles that ultimately enable them to be the best that they can be. It's an idea where the leader provides overall guidance and then empowers and enables their teams to do what they need to do to enable the team to be at their absolute best. And Tony embodies servant leadership. He's all about really providing the tools, the resources, and engaging you and empowering you in a way that brings you to your absolute best performance. And that's something that I aspire to continue to drive to other leaders in our organization as I model Tony's very, very, very wonderful leadership.
Boy, I second that nomination. A quick story. Years ago, when he was running DTE, we lived about three blocks away. And one morning, I was leaving at 4:30 in the morning to catch a plane to Dallas, and there's a little pond right in front of where Tony and Sarah lived. And it had snowed the night before, and here's a man with a snowblower on the pond blowing the snow at 4:30 in the morning, and it was Tony Early. Quite a man. Speaking of quite a person, on March 1st, 2017, you were named CEO President of PGE, thereby becoming the first Latino CEO of a Fortune 500 company. When you called your mom and your dad, Geisha, what did you tell them and what did they say?
It was very special, Jack. Very, very special. As you can imagine, my mom and dad leaving Cuba, leaving their families behind, leaving everything behind, really on the promise of a better life for their daughter. And here's their daughter, their little girl, because for them, I'll always be their little girl, right?
Yes.
Telling them that I've just been named CEO of a Fortune 200 company. And they were so proud. There were tears. There were a lot of tears. I think all three of us cried. It was just the culmination of just this amazing goal. And my father said to me, you know, Geisha, this could only happen in America. And he's so right. This is a place that really allows you to bring your best game forward and rewards your effort. And I think for them, it was just such a validation of the choices that they had made, specifically to leave Cuba and to afford me a better life and to have this amazing opportunity. They're grateful. I'm grateful. And it was a very special moment, one that I'll never forget.
We're talking to Geisha Williams. Geisha, throughout your career, you've been thrown into a wide variety of challenging assignments. How have you gotten up to speed so quickly, time after time?
Well, you know, I think you develop a certain confidence in your ability to sort of tackle issues. The more challenging the issue and you're able to overcome the issue, the more confidence it gives you to sort of tackle the next one. But I would tell you, no one does it alone. I've always had the great fortune of having wonderful people on my team that are so committed, so capable. And so it's really about all of us together tackling issues, not just me. And I've always been blessed with having absolutely wonderful team members. And so I give them really most of the credit.
What advantages are there in being a woman in the role of CEO president of a Fortune 200 company?
You know, I don't know that there really are specific advantages for being a woman in this role. I think that there are certainly advantages to having diversity in the leadership ranks, having our leadership team be made up of diverse sort of backgrounds of people, experiences, points of view, et cetera. I think there's a lot of advantage to a leadership team that's made of diversity. With me, I think that I bring a lot in terms of my engineering and my operational background. So I think it's not necessarily an advantage to me. I think it is an advantage to the organization, though, to have that broad diversity of background.
There's another iconic leader in town, Gene Miller, for years ran Comerica. He started in the mailroom, Geisha. And one time he told me that when he became CEO of Comerica, a friend said, Gene, CEO does not stand for chief executive officer. CEO stands for customers, employees, and owners.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that statement?
I think that's right. I think it's really about balancing the various needs of the various stakeholders. And again, going back to Tony and the servant leadership sort of model that he provided for me, being a servant leader for the various communities that you serve, your customers, your employees, your owners, and making sure that you're constantly looking at their needs and figuring out how to really optimize their outputs and optimize their benefits. So I think that's very smart, actually. I'm going to keep that for myself. I like that.
Okay. Speaking of balancing, Geisha, how do you balance being a mom, a wife, and a CEO of a Fortune 200 company?
Wow, it's really difficult. I don't think there's a silver bullet or a secret recipe for that. I think some days are better than other days. I have had, though, Jack, a tremendous amount of help. I've had a great network my entire life that's been helpful to me. You know, my mom and dad were nearby when we were raising our girls. Our girls are now older. I've always had great neighbors that were always available at a pinch. My husband and I have always looked at our responsibilities as parents as very much a partnership, so very balanced, and I could always call on Jay to help out with the girls, whether it was a school project or homework. And so I think it's really, first of all, recognizing that you need help, that you need support, that you need a network. And maybe it's your church, maybe it's your neighbors, maybe you're lucky to have family around, but I don't think anyone can do it alone. I certainly couldn't have done it alone. I really am very grateful for the fact that I had such a supporting environment around me.
We're talking to a most unbelievable person, Geisha Williams. And I'm Jack Crisul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisul. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Geisha Williams, who was born in Cuba, emigrated to the United States when she was 5 with her family, and is now the first Latino CEO of a Fortune 200 company, let alone a Fortune 500 company. Geisha, do you ever realize and or think about the impact you have personally on the Latino people?
You know, Jack, I never thought of it. I always just sort of did my thing, worked hard, tried to be the best leader that I could be, and I never really thought of myself as a Latino leader or anything like that. I just was a leader. And when I became CEO, the Latino community really has had such an incredibly positive reaction. And so I recognize that it is a milestone. I recognize that it's a big deal for the community, and so I'm enormously, appreciative of all the calls that I've gotten and the support that I've gotten from the Latino community. But I think what we have to work towards is a day when being a woman and a Latina in a top leadership role in a company like mine is so commonplace that it's not news. I think the fact that it is news is very telling. I'm the first. I'm the only. And I look forward to the day where I'm old news, that it is so commonplace to have women, Latinas, other diverse folks in such high-ranking positions that it's not a big deal. The fact that it's a big deal tells you something about how far we still need to go. I really believe that we need more Latinas to embrace the concept of why not you in both private enterprise and public service. And the more of us that can take on that leadership mantle, the more of us are going to be successful, and frankly, the less big of an issue it's going to be on a going-forth basis.
Geisha, the name of the show is Anything Is Possible, but the day will never come when Geisha Williams is old news. Trust me. Trust me. There'll be peace in the Middle East before that happens. Geisha, what role do you see natural gas playing in the energy industry, not just in California, but throughout America?
Natural gas is such an important fuel. It plays a tremendously important role, not just, as you said, here in California, but I think nationally. And I think it will continue to play an important role for many, many decades to come. It's a very effective and efficient energy option for home heating, industrial applications. And I tell you, people love cooking with natural gas. In many parts of the country, we're seeing gas as a transition fuel away from coal. In California, though, you know, with greenhouse gas reduction targets being as steep as they are, we're actually looking at how do we begin to reduce our gas output down the road, many, many, many years down the road. So over the long term, we're looking at ways to reduce the carbon footprint of the gas system and of the gas system itself. So we're looking at renewable gas as an option. We're looking at how to capture methane and inject that into our gas system. So we're exploring gas applications that, frankly, make more sense to transition to electric over the long term. For us, this is going to be a gradual transition that takes many, many years. I think it has to be done very thoughtfully and in a way that keeps energy affordable for customers. And I think we need to always give customers an option of what type of energy they want. And I can tell you that here in California, our customers really, really want gas service.
What does the future hold for nuclear power, for Pacific Gas and Electric, and for America's energy mix?
Yeah, so nuclear is a very important, I think, power source in the United States, certainly. Different regions, though, of the country are approaching nuclear in different ways, depending on their needs, depending on the mix of resources, depending on their state policies. For us, nuclear has been a clean, reliable source of electricity for decades. We have a nuclear power plant called Diablo Canyon, and it is tremendous. It is one of the safest, best-performing plants in the country and one that we're very, very proud of. But the energy landscape in California is shifting. As we look to the future, we have proposed operating Diablo Canyon until its licenses expire in 2024 and 2025, and then after that, not applying for an extension. And the reason for that, it's really very much a product of where California is headed, with an emphasis on renewables like solar and wind, and a strong emphasis on energy efficiency. So as we looked at our power needs on a long-term basis, the need for a baseload plant like Diablo Canyon just greatly, the need and the value, frankly, for a baseload plant like Diablo Canyon greatly diminishes over time. So our focus is on making sure that the transition is done with the interests of our customers, the community, and our employees at the forefront. And so we want to operate this plant as safely and reliably as we can all the way until we shut it down in 2025.
Expanding on that concept of solar power, what is solar power, Geisha, and where does it fit going long-term into the equation for Pacific Gas and Electric in America?
Yeah, no, so solar power, we greatly support the growth of solar power. We have both large-scale solar developments and then also something we call private rooftop solar, which are small solar arrays that are on top of people's homes, like their roofs on their homes and their businesses. California is a national leader in the adoption of private solar. As a matter of fact, Jack, about 20% of all the private solar in the United States is in our service area. So we really have a great amount of this. And, you know, we've got great solar resources here. It's really sunny in California a very large part of the year. We make it very simple for customers to connect solar to the grid. We also buy their excess power, so if they generate more than they need, we buy their excess power. And by being connected to the grid, we also provide them power at night or other times when their panels just simply aren't producing power or not enough power. We do think we've got to make some adjustments in terms of rates in California and elsewhere in the country so that customers are paying a fair price for their use of the grid. Right now, it's a little bit not quite where it needs to be. We continue to see a very bright future for solar, not just in California, but really in the rest of the country, and we're pleased to support that growth as part of a lower carbon future.
As our time winds down this evening, what advice, Geisha, would you give to our young listeners, please?
I would give them this advice. I would say, first of all, prepare yourself. Get a good education and have an eye on the prize in terms of what you want to achieve. When you think big. You know, anything is possible. And I think it's really important that you set your sights on something that you really want to achieve and then lean into it. Go for those tough jobs. Put yourself in a position to succeed and really go for it. I think at the same time, I think it's really important as parents, as teachers, as community leaders that we help children and youth and this next generation of leaders understand that the right educational path will take them to where they want to go. We've got to help them know that an education can truly make a difference. I would also say, you know what, start early. Volunteer, be a part of your community. Perhaps you can be on a local nonprofit board or volunteer for a community group. I can guarantee that that will have an impact. It will open your eyes about what you can do in the community. That's so important. And I would go back to that great advice that I got from my mentor, Clark Cook. As you see different things that you can accomplish in the future, dream big, think big, know that anything is possible, and ask yourself, why not you?
Speaking of thinking big, if you go to Google and just throw that think big, I think there's a picture of Geisha Williams that pulls up.
Yes, there is.
Geisha, you're a modern-day Horatio Alger story. Congratulations, and please keep helping all you do for all of America.
Thank you, Jack, and thank you for the opportunity to tell my story. I very much appreciate it.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Fasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.